This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Download the Odyssey app, log in, and listen for 1 hour each day. So an outstanding opportunity to experience one of the best weekends of the year out in Las Vegas. George Ruggiero is producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. You can follow him on Twitter, on X, at KingGeorge94. So make sure you do that. I want to tell everybody what we got coming up on the program. Last night, Memphis Grizzlies finished the pre-All-Star game portion of their schedule. They fall at the Clippers, the Intuit Dome, last night, 128-114. They are still winless in the state of California this week, or I should say this season. The Grizzlies have 22 turnovers last night that led to 41 points for the Clippers. So they are now 36-18, and they remain in the second spot of the Western Conference standings, however, only a half game ahead of Denver. I want to know how everybody's feeling, because on the one hand, I think you can make this argument. Could have easily been a schedule loss last night. It's a team that you have not particularly matched up well with, and it's the second night of a back-to-back. The previous game had a ton of pace. You are without Ja Morant. You're without Vince Williams Jr. You're shorthanded. And the Clippers looked like they were what they probably envisioned being at the beginning of the season, because Kawhi Leonard played and he was phenomenal. It felt like almost every single person that was open in the corner for a three for the Clippers seemed to nail all the shots. But I want to know how everybody's feeling. So if you want to get involved in the program, 901-445-0929, how do you feel right now about the Grizzlies? Because on the flip side, you could look at this as another example, George, of a team that we know that they are very physical on the perimeter defensively. Chris Harrington mentioned it. Zubac is a very underrated player. And I thought it was really telling. Zubac early in the first quarter picks up the two quick fouls. And at that point, it felt like the Grizzlies were going to get blown out early. Zubac hits the bench, and all of a sudden, the Grizzlies go on a run, and they take like a 13-11 lead. I think it was a 13-2 run. And you're like, oh, it's a little different when he's not in the game. Yet, the Clippers make the decision, screw foul trouble. We're going to put him back in there. And the game stabilized a little bit for the Clippers. But then Desmond Bane just went absolutely nuclear. And, I mean, it felt like he was, like, pulling up from the logo. He was locked in. And so that kind of gave the Grizzlies a cushion. And you're sitting there going, like, oh, this is a little different. And then the second quarter happens.
Yeah, it was something. I'll say that much.
And then the second half was a continuation. And this is like the other thing I was looking at. So obviously the number that stood out, and it was the number that the broadcast focused a lot on, was the turnovers. 22 turnovers leads to 41 points. And even during the halftime coach's interview with Fish, the coaching staff came out and was like, the turnovers are obviously the one thing that we don't love. And a big problem that they were having was a lot of the turnovers were happening in isolation, one-on-one. And so when the ball gets ripped away, it was open floor. And you could tell that the Clippers were very grateful. And on top of that, like, that's a very good defensive team. When you look at Grizzlies games and wins this year, they've basically been sub 15 turnovers. They're averaging in losses nearly 19 turnovers. I'm not saying it's literally as simple as that. I did feel like last night it was as simple as that.
Yeah, because at the same time, it wasn't a particularly bad shooting night,
no,
all things considered. I mean, they shot 49.4% from the field and 50% from three. They were awful at the free throw line. And I was listening on the broadcast. They, you know, lauded the new wall out there at the – it's the Intuit Dome, isn't it?
The Intuit Dome.
Yeah.
Next to the old Forum. It's kind of by LAX. It's out kind of by SoFi.
Gotcha. The new fixture, I guess, back behind the rim where they are just, I guess, giving it to opposing players.
So the concept is
– Did you watch on FanDuel? Okay.
Yeah,
I listened.
So I also – my DirecTV stream was struggling last night, so I watched on the FanDuel app, and I did not realize there are different commercials on the FanDuel app.
Oh, yeah.
They were running, like, AI-generated mobile phone games – mobile games. Like, I was like, and I put it out on Twitter.
That's
awful. I was like, do y'all normally watch this? And they're like, and everyone's like, yep. And it's like, it's mind numbing. It's like, it's the same five commercials on repeat. So the concept with the wall is it's behind the basket. It's obviously always going to be the basket where the away team technically gets to choose which ends of the floor that they want to go on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the traditional end of the floor that most teams will pick in the second half to go to.
Gotcha.
And so the idea is only Clippers fans can sit there.
Yep.
Like, I think if you sell your ticket to an opposing fan, like, they'll blacklist you. Like, it's supposed to be for Clippers fans by Clippers fans.
Interesting. That's
I will okay. say this. If it really was, like, because if Eric was mentioning it, it was so loud on that end of the floor that I honestly thought it was pumped in crowd noise.
Yeah, no, Eric mentioned it more than once during the game.
The guys on the TV broadcast were mentioning, like, hey, it's rowdy in here, and it's, you know, it's the last game before the All-Star break, and Kawhi's back, and they're starting to play better, so, like, you can see that. I just really felt like I didn't know what to make of it, because it almost, to me, felt like a Rorschach test. If you are a fan that is concerned about how the Grizzlies play against physical teams, that did not alleviate any of your concerns. With that said, it was the last game before All-Star break, and that 100% had last day before spring break vibes.
Oh, 100%.
The game in general.
And you also have to look, you know, not giving any excuses here, because at the end of the day, you know, they're professionals. Second day of a back-to-back, second day after long travel type back-to-back, you know, going from the Mid-South out west, missing your best player in Ja Morant and arguably your best defender in Vince Williams Jr., who is just, I mean, anytime he touches the floor is on absolute demon time and is just there to harass anyone with the ball in their hands. Now, I don't want to say that that wasn't expected, because you have to think as well, both of those guys are coming off injuries where they've missed, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks.
We already know that
they're on Vince
is on a minutes restriction, and while Ja's maybe not on a minutes restriction, there is obviously caution being exerted because of, yet again, not only does he have the hip, he had shoulder surgery, he's had the sprained AC joint. Like, you can see where I think they know internally, we're only going to go as far as he goes. We got to make sure he's there.
Yeah, and if that requires him not to play some legs of a back-to-back, I think I'd take that trade.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this is kind of where I've struggled. The Grizzlies are overly cautious on injuries.
Mm-hmm.
I would feel a lot better about it if I felt like we got to the playoffs every single year and everybody was at full strength.
That's fair. I mean, I will say, though, that last season was a bit of an outlier. You know, I don't think last season's...
Yeah, I'm even kind of dismissing last... Because last season, I've just removed from my memory.
It was just...
On the TNT game, when they flashed the graphic comparing the offense to last season, I was like, that is a tell your story.
Absolutely. Even when they said it at first, correct, they were like, look at how good the Grizzlies' offense has been this year. It's been so much improved from last season. I'm like, did you guys... Like even
you realize that they didn't season? They weren't even a G League team last season.
No.
Like they were introducing themselves in the locker room. So, you know, again, without all the information with Ja, like I don't know. To me, like that was a game that you could reasonably tell that he was not going to play.
This game?
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I think that was probably fair. But it just had such a weird feel to it. Overall, because they weren't particularly poor on the glass. I mean, they only got out-rebounded by, you know, six total, and that's four and two, offensive to defensive. But this is a Clippers team that you cannot give those extra opportunities to, especially when you realize who's probably doing the offensive rebounding there. It's going to be a guy like Kawhi Leonard. It's going to be a guy like Zubats, where it isn't, you know, take it down, kick it out. It's they're taking it down and going straight back to the rim and probably either getting the foul or hitting the shot, or in some cases, a lot in this game, both. I mean,
yes,
Clippers.
Kawhi definitely, he had some tough finishes. Harden, I thought, was pretty good too.
The big thing that I heard, and this was, you know, Eric talking about this last night, the defensive effort, the shift in defensive effort that we've seen this season from James Harden compared to years past for him is really impressive, because that was always the big gripe with him was, oh, this guy only gives effort on one side of the ball. You know, he might be a bit of an underrated, you know, just one-on-one defender. But this year, he's putting out actual team defense effort.
Yeah, and
it's been impressive.
I think that's as simple as if you're going to play for Ty Lue, I think at a certain point, you're probably going to have to play defense. Because I always felt like when he was in Houston, he was the king of cheater defense. Like, to your point about one-on-one defense.
Yeah.
He was the guy that would, like, let you go past him, and he was pretty skilled at ripping the ball from behind you. It was a lot of, like, that kind of one-on-one defense, but not in a team.
He wasn't
concept.
Facing anyone up, yeah.
No, the other takeaway that I had was, like you said, they only get beat 46-40 on the glass, but it was so obvious to me that Vince Williams is going to, I don't know if it'll ever be like Vince is in the starting lineup, but for all intents and purposes, when we'll get to the end of the season, presuming health, Vince is going to be that fourth guy.
Vince is a closer.
Well, it's just like, to me, it's the difference between Tuesday night and Wednesday night. So Tuesday night with the Suns, I felt like the Grizzlies, and in particular Vince, rebounds that were kind of like toss-ups,
mm-hmm.
Vince was grabbing them. Whereas last night, it felt like those same types of rebounds, the Clippers got all of them. And to me, that was the striking difference. But it leaves you with this giant question of, okay, so what do we think? Because if we're coming out of football season and you're still using football brain and you're emotional and whatnot, that's not going to be the type of result that's going to quell your fears.
No.
But it's also entirely possible that that's the type of game that should have been expected.
I think the big thing with a game like this is the Clippers typically tend to play. Now, I understand they scored quite a bit more than their average last night. They play just day-to-day, game in and game out, a playoff style of basketball where we expect it to be in the mud, slow it down, play tight defense, clean the glass. That's their game. That's Ty Lue. That's their system. And they're very, very adept at it. I mean, they're a good basketball team this year, you know, even with what a lot of people look at and say, that's not a great lineup by any stretch. I mean, it's all dependent really on Kawhi Leonard and James Harden.
Yeah, the other thing that I was saying that was striking is I did find myself going, if the Grizzlies see the Clippers in a 3-6 series.
Yeah, I don't like that.
No, thank you.
I don't like that at all.
Like, if you put it into contrast of if the Suns were to get out of the play-in game and the Grizzlies saw them in the 2-7 game, that or 2-7 series, that does not, despite the fact that Durant's over there.
That does not bother me nearly as much because we've already seen it now. How many times the Clippers, bad matchup. OKC's a bad matchup for everyone, so that's not exactly telling a whole lot. But it's these physical teams that, you know, have a big man that not only defend with their physicality and play hard at the rim. I mean, Zubac was efficient. I mean, 5 of 7 from the field for 12 points, 13 boards. That's all they really need. And it's his physical just presence that seems to do something to these Grizzlies. And it's not just him. You know, there are these physical centers across the league that they've had these issues with. And I don't think it's a lack of size from the Grizzlies because, I mean, Zach Edey's the biggest of them all.
Yeah, Chris had made the point yesterday that Zubac's career arc, if you're someone that wants to think best-case scenario Zach Edey, Zubac is one to look at it because...
Mind you, I love it, Ivica Zubac. He's a great player.
I mean, listen, if they got that type of years out of Zach Edey, that would be a massive hit.
Oh yeah.
I mean, there's also this reality. Yes, that team is, I think, now what, 30-23?
Mm-hmm.
They're 10-5 when Kawhi Leonard plays.
Oh,
it's
no.
It's a lot.
Shocking.
I hope everybody's sitting down for that.
A team is better when Kawhi Correct. Leonard is on the floor. Ooh.
Significantly better.
Yeah.
And like that is kind of the, all right, whenever we post All-Star break, when we'll start getting into more matchups, like who do you want to see? Like, that was just kind of the, on this like two game road trip, that was my first thought was I'd be totally fine seeing Phoenix in the first round. I would not be good seeing the Clippers in the first round.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm really curious right now just to look at what the other possibilities there are. Minnesota doesn't bother me too much. Same with Golden State. Dallas right now, I mean,
I think the real question with Dallas is what are they at that point?
Absolutely.
Because it's entirely possible that you have Anthony Davis out for a month. Like, how does that impact the standings? Like, they got a big win last night. against the Warriors, but it's like, okay, well, those two teams are sitting at 8-10 or, you know, 8th and 10th in the standings. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't really know. Like, it was a fun game.
Yeah.
But, like, it was, like, intense, but I didn't know, like, I didn't sit there and go, you know what? As constructed on the floor, those two teams are dangerous.
No. And my thing is, looking at that game, in particular, because they're right, you know, next to each other in the standings, just about in that play-in tournament. How sustainable or how realistic is it for Dallas to recreate that type of performance in a play-in tournament? They win by 4, but it took Kyrie Irving putting up 42.
Yes.
How realistic is it that that's going to happen in a play-in tournament again?
And I mean, like, that's the other thing. It's like, for the Mavs, you had Anthony Davis in his debut.
Looked good.
Awesome.
Real good.
Like, you're sitting there. I think at that point, you're sitting there going in the first half, like, okay, I still don't love what we did, but, like, let's go Mavs. You're feeling pretty good about it.
And then
a non-contact injury happens.
That the first three quarters from AD was, you know what? You can convince me. I can see the vision now. And then he gets hurt with a non-contact injury, and at the same time, as Gabe has been saying this week, I think it really, between the trade itself and the Mavericks' response, you know, from ownership and leadership, they've angered the basketball gods.
Yeah, I know this. They've certainly angered their fan base.
Well, that
the people, yeah. The people that they want paying money, they've certainly angered them. And then, like, I guess the other thing to consider with last night, because you don't want to simply overreact to one basketball game. It's like Grizzlies are on the second night of a back-to-back. They're traveling west. Clippers had been chilling out at home.
Yeah, since like Saturday. Didn't they have like 4 or 5 nights off?
I think they had 3 days off.
Yeah, they're just chilling.
And so you can sit there and go, this is a schedule loss. I think the problem, though, is, yes, this is a schedule loss, but it looks like a lot of the other concerning losses.
Yes. It has that same vibe, that same kind of mold of these losses.
It followed the same script.
Of the losses that we're sitting here saying, these are actually concerning. Some of them, you know, where, like Oklahoma City, that was just, to me, a pure effort. It was a beatdown. It just was not a good basketball game. Full stop. I don't think that's going to happen every single time those two teams play. My concern level for this game was a little bit more than that game, because at this point, we all know OKC is kind of just better than everyone.
Yeah, I mean, at a certain point, it's like when a team has an 8-game lead in the standings at the All-Star break.
Tells you something.
Might be for a reason.
Yeah, probably.
And, I mean, I think the thing that emotionally from fans, what would be disheartening is it feels like every time the fan base is ready to like fully get on board and you kind of need the big win to convince people, they've laid the egg. Like the Oklahoma City game is kind of like what I'm talking about. It's like, all right, OKC's coming in, second night of a back-to-back. They're going to be shorthanded. We've been at home. We can rest up. We're good at home. We've got Dez back. Like, here we go. Like, this is an opportunity to have like a big win. And the game was like over in the second quarter.
Yeah, that's a tough thing because at the same time, we also have to look at it and realize they're still second in the West by half a game over Denver, and Denver's turned it on big time. Well, as a team, they've you know, really rallied around Jokic and the way he's been playing all season. I mean, he's been great all year. But even then, I mean, we're still talking about a top three team in the West, especially with Houston falling off the way that they have. And I understand there's really only, 3 games between second and fifth. How many of those games are they actually going to drop?
Yeah, so if you made me guess, I think they end up flipping places with Denver by the end.
I could see that.
And that's
I think that's realistic. I mean, I don't think that's unfair to say either based on the way that Denver's been playing as of late. They're on an 8-game win streak.
The thing, though, that's interesting to me is, okay, we've seen 3 examples. Like, let's say the Grizzlies wind up holding on to the 2 spot. We have 3 examples of the Grizzlies being the 2 seed.
Mm-hmm.
The first Ja Morant playoff run, because I'm not counting the bubble.
Sure.
Or I'm sorry, I guess that's not true. They then had the in-between COVID year, the limited access year.
Yes.
So they win the first game against Utah and then lose 3. But the first time with Ja Morant, like that felt like the best spot to be as a fan, which is young team. Everything that's happening is gravy. We're seeing record wins, first division title, like kind of like, hey, let's beat the Timberwolves. Then after that, like anything else is gravy.
Yeah.
Turns out, like, we could easily look back in hindsight and realize, like, that might have been a really good shot because you end up losing to the eventual champion in 6 games. You and Boston were the only 2 teams that took them to 6 games. And you had a layup opportunity at the buzzer, tough layup, but that ball could have gone in, and maybe the series is different, and who knows after that. Then you have the next year where they don't win as many games. The West was not as good from a win-loss perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And you had the Ja off the court drama.
Yeah.
And then you throw in the Lakers, Dylan Brooks, LeBron, and then just getting absolutely curb stomped in the last game wasn't a lot of fun. So if we say those are the two extremes, it does feel like this year is, from a fan perspective, it's not as fun as the first year was, but I also acknowledge context. It matters.
True.
It's obviously not as dreadful as the other example.
Yeah, I don't have that same level of anxiety come playoff time. I don't think.
So it's clearly somewhere in the middle. But what fascinates me is why does this not feel more fun? And
expectation.
I think there's like a couple of reasons. Number one, I've always said this. We're dramatic as a city with basketball.
Yeah.
We swing very far, very quickly. We're a paper bag in the wind or a plastic bag in the wind. Like we swing emotionally. We always do that. And to a certain degree, there are fans, like that's kind of a part of being a fan. But I think in particular with basketball, we are extremely dramatic. I think the second possibility is you can't trick your eyes. And I just think that there's a big problem with, okay, this team's had good wins, but there's a lot more examples of, in the big games, bad losses.
Yeah, and that is always, I mean, in a way, part of being a sports fan in the modern day is metrics versus eye test a lot of things.
Well, and in particular with the NBA, I think a third factor is there's this, as we have moved in the NBA to really all that matters is the playoffs, there's this larger question of what does regular season success mean? I also think that it's kind of gotten a little overblown. I think when the Lakers made it to the Western Conference Finals from the play-in tournament, that kind of made people go, see, regular season success doesn't matter. Well, what did we see last year? It did matter.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It still never made sense to me, but you had the Timberwolves having home court advantage, being favored in game one, yet the series price said that Phoenix was the favorite. It still mathematically never made any sense to me. Well, what happened? They absolutely wiped the floor and swept them. Like, yes, the Mavericks knock off the Thunder, who were the one seed, and the T-Wolves knock off Denver. But it's like those series, when you kind of put them into context, like it made basketball sense. PJ Washington goes absolutely nuclear in really the only series he did in the entire playoffs.
Yeah.
And he swung it. Also, Luka Doncic, great player.
Absolutely.
Versus
a playoff performer.
Versus a team that did not have a lot of playoff experience, and it's a six-game series that could have swung either way. Denver, their depth and lack of depth finally caught up to them against the Timberwolves. And the Timberwolves overwhelmed them with depth, and Anthony Edwards was great. I still think, though, part of the apprehension, I guess the fourth possibility is also you only have Jaren guaranteed through next year. With that being said, like, I would be more surprised if Jaren left.
Oh, that would be shocking.
Right.
I mean,
Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think part of what the Grizzlies have been doing is making way so that they can keep Jaren. Like, I think that's a huge part of this.
100%.
But I also think the fifth reason is, and I think this is a legitimate question, doesn't mean that it can't happen, but I think people in the back of their mind are going, all right, we know Ja's good, we know Jaren's good, we know Dez is good, but this team's starting two rookies.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have to, but they are.
Right now, they are.
Yes.
And for the large portion of the season, they have been. And I think it's undeniable that Jalen Wells has massively exceeded expectations. I feel like Edie is somewhere in the neutral to slightly disappointing.
Based on what he did in Purdue, I would agree with that.
I mean, I think for me, the thing that's been the most surprising about Zach Edey is I think he's been a little bit better defensively than I expected.
Yes.
But he has been worse offensively than I expected. I thought the opposite was going to be true. Now, is that a me problem? I don't know. Like, because I thought his offensive game's fairly polished. Like, could I envision scenarios where he gets played off the floor? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But I still thought he would be pretty good at the rim. I thought he'd be a good finisher. He's shown signs, but it's been wildly inconsistent.
Yes, he's been fine.
It's almost like he's been a rookie. There's been good and there's been bad. I think that's also playing with people. It's like, okay, we've never seen teams do this. How should we feel?
Yeah, I mean, that really is the big question is, it, how much of it is how do we feel and how should we?
Because that's a fair question.
Like, on one hand, should we just, I don't want to say should we be unreasonably positive about it, because at the end of the day, we're at the All-Star break, they're second in the West, they are starting two rookies, and a lot of that comes down to the fact that some of the young performers that saw last season have missed a large chunk of the first half of the season due to injury, as well as some of your stars, namely Ja Morant and Desmond Bane, have missed time due to injury. And at the same time, I think this is one of the deepest teams in the league, and I think we all can agree with that.
And then
on the other hand, like you said, they have a couple good wins. They have a couple bad wins, or bad losses, excuse me.
But then I've kind of reached the conclusion, and I think it's actually this. I think the biggest reason why people don't know how to feel is because Ja Morant's been inconsistent.
Yeah,
whether it be inconsistent on playing, whether it be inconsistent when he does play, because I think back to the very beginning of the season when I do think it actually felt fun. Prior to Ja dislocating his hip, I thought he was playing outstanding basketball. Like, honestly, from eye test, best of his career. I know his numbers weren't through the roof, but just in control, best basketball of his career.
Found his fit.
Ja gets hurt. In and out of the lineup. Been moody at times. I really think we're actually riding the Ja Morant wave. Like, I think that is actually what it is. Because if you think about the times when everyone feels pretty good, it's usually when he's feeling pretty good.
Yeah, no, that's probably the best point. I mean, because at the same time, there's been a level of team success, whether he's on or off the court.
Right.
But we don't feel the same way about the team at all when he's not on the court.
I think there's a legitimate argument. One of the best wins of the season is at Milwaukee, and Jaren was phenomenal.
Yes.
Jaren and Giannis Antetokounmpo were on the floor at
going
the same time.
At it.
And Jaren was the better player in a fourth quarter. Does that mean Jaren's better than Giannis? No. But at the same time, they were matched up, and he got the better of him. It still doesn't feel the same as like when you have when Ja's on the floor and Ja is rolling. And I'm not even talking about Ja getting 40.
No, it's when he is the conductor, when he's the engine that's driving the team.
It's when he's bouncing around, man.
It's when he's having fun, we're having fun.
Yes, I think that's what it is. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Jonathan Von Tobel of VSiN going to join the program. We're also going to play Writer Than Right trivia during hour number two. Big time prize. We got four tickets to go see Sebastian Maniscalco and Jim Gaffigan next week at FedEx Forum. I believe it's next Friday. So we'll be giving those away with Kevin Cerrito during hour number two. But JVT, when we come back, right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code STYLE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code STYLE. Enjoy!
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
On ESPN. Jonathan Von Tobel is a host of VSiN Primetime with our boy Tim Murray. You can download the VSiN app and watch anytime and stream live. Also, you can hear him on ESPN Las Vegas. He's on X at me, JBT. JBT, I want to start off with an impossible question, but you're smart and I like your opinion on this. Can you make the Luka Doncic trade make sense?
Not really, but I guess the way you would make it make sense is that Dallas is right in their concerns about his conditioning and his body, and that they know something a little bit more deep about his habits behind the scenes, and that if in like 5 or 7 years he's fallen apart, he has terrible conditioning, he's only playing like 40 to 50 games, then I think that is the only way that it really does make sense. The problem is, there's no evidence of that really happening, right? I mean, the guy does have bad conditioning, but he also plays year-long basketball. We've seen him participate in national contests, right, over the summer for 2 straight years, FIBA World Cup, Olympics, qualifying tournaments. So I think that's how it makes sense, right? Like, his body does fall apart, and they're right in betting against him, but we just haven't seen any evidence that that's actually the case.
Even if you've decided to move on, and I know that this has been rehashed, but I'm curious to know your thoughts. How do you square the fact that they didn't at least try to get a market for Luka? Like, if you decided to move on, that's fine. Like, okay, well, yeah. I can accept you've got inside information. But the idea that you have a 5-time first-team All-NBA guy that's 25 years old and you don't take him to market, it never will make sense to me.
Yeah, that to me, I think, is the most egregious part about this, right? Like, again, going back to the premise that he has poor conditioning issues, okay, fine. You know what? Whatever. We've seen it. If you want to move on from him, I agree with you. Like, all right, that's not really the worst thing in the world. The action of him getting traded wasn't the crazy part. It was what they did to get rid of him. You know, it's just bad business, as I keep saying it. If I'm trying to ship off something of great value, I'm not calling one person. And by the way, the one person that since this trade has happened, we have learned you've had a relationship with, have talked to him about this. Like, you've worked against yourself actively in negotiations leading up to it. And then when the negotiations came, he used that all against you to cut down the price and then, of course, get him for a very cheap price considering what the asset was. You can't do that. You've got to call these other teams. Teams like, you know, Memphis has assets. Houston has assets. Like, there's so many teams. Even if these teams don't want them, you call them to see what they're going to offer for you, and then you go to the Lakers, because even if you want Anthony Davis at the end of the day, then you can sweeten the deal. I'm amazed by the way that they handled that.
Yeah, even if you know you're, in the end, you want Anthony Davis. All right, that's fine. I found it ironic, of course, he has an amazing first half in his debut for the Mavs, and then, of course, non-contact injury. It's like, okay, well, that probably leads to also some fan agitation. But even if you've decided that that's what you're targeting, it still makes no sense to me. Like, are you really think that they're walking away from Luka?
Right. Like, I don't know what they're doing. I agree with you.
Okay, let's talk about it from the Lakers' perspective a little bit. Does it change your opinion of them right now? Does it, you know, because they've still got to figure out what they're going to do in the middle. How do you size them up now with Luka?
I mean, I think they're going to be a very high-end offense. I mean, I think they're going to be what they've seen the last two games, right? A very high-end offensive team with some real issues on defense. You know, Utah, of course, last night, I think, drops 130 on them. The night before, they get over their team total as well, get to 113. Then that second half was much better in that first game that we're talking about. But I think this is exactly what they're going to be here over these last two games. I think they're going to have a very high floor and very high ceiling on offense. I never doubt that two players like Luka Doncic and LeBron James will make it work. I keep invoking, when people ask me about this, is those Houston Rockets teams with Chris Paul and James Harden, right? Like, that team made it to a Western Conference Finals. That team was great. Two ball-dominant guys can work. But I just don't know where they're getting their defense from, right? When you're talking about Dorian Finney-Smith maybe having to be like your stopper along the perimeter, at this point of his career, I think you're probably in a tough spot as a team. We saw Hayes get a little dinged up yesterday, too, so that's going to be a problem for them. Center, I don't know if Alex Len's going to be a problem, or the godsend at center that's going to be your rim protector, so that's going to be an issue. And they don't really have a ton of lob threats for Luka. That's when he works best. I mean, we saw this last year, right? Daniel Gafford, Derek Lively. When he's got a lob threat at center, he unlocks a whole lot of different things when he's got the ball in his hand. So I think they're just going to be a very solid offensive team. They should be a playoff team, considering where they're already at in the standings and now adding Luka Doncic to the mix. But I don't know if I can trust them to win a best of seven four straight times, considering how poorly they're going to be on defense.
How much trust do you have in the Thunder to come out of the West?
A lot. So it's funny, after all of this, right, after the trade of Luka and everything, and so people ask you, like, so what's the bet to make? What do you do? I think it's the Thunder. Like, you know, there's plus 115, plus 120 out there. I think this team is the Western Conference Invitational, the Oklahoma City Invitational, as I've called it, in the Western Conference. I love this team, and I think you guys out in Memphis kind of learned a little bit the other day. I mean, how sweet was that spot for the Grizzlies the other day on Saturday?
You got the Thunder coming in shorthanded. You've been at home chilling out, and like, that's what we were kind of discussing this at the beginning of the show. This has been a kind of a problem that the fan base has had, is that the Grizzlies have, like, I think in the back of people's minds, there's maybe some, are the Grizzlies the Dolphins, in the sense of, if they're going up against a bad team, they're going to absolutely smoke them. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're going to put them up and they're going to put them away. But then when they go up against the physical teams, like, they get punked a little bit, and then you're sitting there going, like, okay, people are waiting for the type of win that gets everybody on board, and you think, like, that's the sweet spot, and then you just go and you lay the absolute egg, and it just kind of has people, like, looking around like, all right, is the second best team really this much? Is the gap between second and first really this wide? Like, I think people are kind of looking around wondering that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. And I don't think it's any fault of Memphis. It's just, I think Oklahoma City's built a monster out there. You know, like when you have the versatility that they do, but we, by the way, we've barely seen them fully constructed, right? Because Hartenstein gets hurt, Holmgren gets hurt. We're barely starting to see those two together. And that was going to be the big upgrade, is now you have two guys you can play up front together, or now you have two centers that you can split up and play with one another. I think it's going to be incredible to watch. So I don't know if it's any fault of Memphis. I just personally think the gap between OKC, the way they've constructed that team, and everybody else is massive. They're so switchable on defense. You've got a whole bunch of guys you trust in one-on-one situations defensively. You've got a very good, dominant alpha scorer in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. You now have front court versatility. I think they're as well constructed as you possibly can be. And by the way, they're extremely well coached to the top. I think Jenkins out there in Memphis did a great job. I think he's one of the better coaches that doesn't get enough credit. I think the team's awesome. But I do think that there's a gap between Oklahoma City and just the entirety of the Western Conference, not just a team like Memphis.
We're talking with Jonathan Von Tobel of VSiN. Follow him on X at MeJVT. All right, let's say for whatever reason, I'm telling you that the Thunder do not win the West. Who are you looking at?
So I think it's the obvious choices are like the Memphis Grizzlies or the Houston Rockets. I think that there's probably a case to be made that if they don't win the West, a team like Denver, because Nikola Jokic is so freaking good, ultimately overcomes all of their defensive weaknesses and just ends up ending them in a shootout kind of deal where, look, I mean, we're talking about the front court versatility. I'm still not trusting Hartenstein and Holmgren or the combination of the two to really stop what Jokic has been able to do. Now, they're so bad on defense, I don't think that's going to be the case, but I think I'm kind of drawing a relatively solid dotted line, right, between those three teams that I just mentioned and everybody else. It's funny, going back to how we opened this conversation, the one team that I thought was going to be the biggest threat to them when fully healthy was Dallas.
Yeah.
when Luka Doncic was still there. But now I just don't know if that's going to be the case, obviously. So I think that that's kind of where you draw the line. We talked about the Lakers. I think they have some flaws on defense that are ultimately going to hold them back. You know, I'm a big Clippers fan, but I think that's a team that is limited on offense unless Kawhi Leonard turns into prime Kawhi, which maybe is a possibility. And then you really start to slip off after that. So I think I'm just looking at Houston, Memphis, or Denver to potentially upend them if that's going to be the case. And that's, I kind of feel pretty confident that that's the end of the line when you're talking about teams that can ultimately do it.
Obviously, the Clippers are another one of those physical teams that give the Grizzlies problems. And Ty Lue, I think, also, I don't feel like I've ever done a 180 on a coach where, and I think maybe that's kind of the LeBron factor, where a coach that you're like, okay, what does this guy actually do? And then you see, like, he gets out of the LeBron business and you're like, oh, this guy can really, really coach.
Yep.
And we saw them last night, and honestly, like, that's about as good as they can look. I do kind of like hold out, like, if Kawhi actually is going to play consistently, and that's obviously the ultimate if in all of sports, like that, and like, oh, Tua stays healthy, I do kind of think that they can present some problems. I really think Zubac is really good. Harden is actually like trying on defense. That's mm-hmm. kind of new to watch. And man, I just feel like every time they get an open corner three, it's like it's going in. I find myself more Clippers curious, I think, maybe than the public.
You're talking to the biggest Clippers stan on the planet, right? Like the last few years, I kept making that case too. Like we saw it last year when they went on that run, would they go like 24-6 or whatever it was in the middle of the season when Kawhi was playing at his absolute peak. And you saw the versatility, you saw how good they can be. They did the right thing in letting Paul George walk. And now this lineup that they have is so versatile, it's switchable. They're very athletic. They've kind of leaned into that a little bit more. Obviously the addition of Ben Simmons, I think, is actually a low key good one because Uriah is really low. And you're seeing they have a big 6'10" guy that can actually engage your offense. You kind of desperately needed somebody else to really start and bring up the ball outside of James Harden. I think it's what they were really lacking. And then Bogdan Bogdanović as well. So, like, I think that there's a lot here for this team and what they've done quietly, like shipping off a couple of guys to get underneath the apron so they can get onto the buyout market and do what they've been doing. I'm with you. And you mentioned Ty Lue. I think he's one of the most underrated coaches in the NBA. His ability to draw up plays, get the most out of guys. He has been quietly doing a brilliant job out there in L.A., and I think he can go toe-to-toe X's and O's wise with any of these guys in the Western Conference. So I would agree. I'm so gun-shy because I have been, like, doing this for the last 3 years of this team, and then Kawhi gets hurt or whoever gets hurt, and they ultimately don't do it. But I agree with you in that their ceiling, I think, can be the best in the NBA, especially when you're talking about dealing with the versatility that Oklahoma City offers. They can totally do it.
All right, let's flip over to the East. I don't want to besmirch what Cleveland has accomplished, but I'm.
Yeah.
Why am I struggling to like believe that they're going to win the East? Like, is it just because Boston's there and, like, I don't care that they're two in the standings? Like, I can't tell if I'm being insane or, like, I'm just kind of seeing, like, I'm just trusting my eyes a little too much. There's something about Cleveland, despite the fact that, like, they're undeniably good, I still just have a tough time seeing, like, that Cleveland's going to be in the finals.
No, I think it's fair. I mean, because we've seen them fail the last couple of years, right? I mean, they had that ugly series against the New York Knicks. And then last year, of course, that they play, I think, one of, like, the most unappealing series ever in the against the Orlando Magic.
I think all seven were on NBA. It felt like all seven were on NBA TV.
Yes, and it felt like all seven were, like, 75 to 72, right?
Yes.
Like, they were all, like just ugly,
like,
games.
Just the whole time, you're like, do I have to watch this? Like, yeah. It's the first time in an NBA game, as bettors will do this in college, you'll bet a game and you don't want to watch it, so you just start scoreboard watching it. It's the first time with an NBA playoff game that I've been like, I might just watch this on the old score tracker.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm a Mount West guy, so I've seen lots of San Diego State games like that. I still remember the horrors of a 42-37 Boise State-San Diego State game from a couple years ago. But no, I think that's why, right? Like, we've seen them fail, but this is a somewhat different team. You do have another year of Max Strus. You do have now DeAndre Hunter added to the fold. They desperately needed a 3-and-D wing. Like, the Isaac Okoro experiment, not to blame it all on one person, but, like, you go back to that Knicks series that they lost, the Knicks every step of the way were like, we do not care that Isaac Okoro is out there. We will not play him. We will not guard him. We will congest the lane and kill you here. And that's exactly what happened. But now DeAndre Hunter adds that little floor spacing ability. He's a little bit more versatile defensively, so that's really going to help you. It allows you to get more versatile with some of your lineups, right? Like, when you go small, you can actually put Strus and DeAndre Hunter out there with, like, an Evan Mobley or with a Jared Allen, so you can still have your shooting versatility there too. And I'm a big Kenny Atkinson stan as well. Like, I was surprised it took that guy so long to find a job, or maybe just waiting for one like this. And we've seen in years past, I keep making the example, look, last year, if I told you the trade deadline that P.J. Washington and Daniel Gafford were going to be the two pieces that unlock an NBA Finals run for a team, you would have called me crazy. And yet that happened. And I don't think it would be the craziest thing in the world to see a team that desperately needed 3-and-D shooting all of a sudden gets unlocked with a very good head coach, a 3-and-D threat that's added. And an Eastern Conference, and frankly, look, I mean, we've seen the Knicks struggle defensively quite a few times. They just gave up 140 points to the Hawks yesterday. And then Boston, as good as they have been, I think they've now won 7 out of 8 games, and after their win and cover last night over San Antonio, has had its flaws as well. So I don't blame you for not doing it, but I do think I wouldn't be surprised if they start pushing the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals, and we're a little bit deeper in that series than we most expected.
Do you hold on any hope for Milwaukee?
No, I can't. I mean, I've wanted to. Maybe Kyle Kuzma is going to help them out, right? And they're going to get a little bit more versatile on defense. But the problem is just when you're talking about the perimeter, who are you putting on an elite opposing guard that you're going, all right, let's go, stop that guy, right? Like, if you're playing if you're playing Cleveland, if you're playing New York, who's getting Jalen Brunson? Who's getting Donovan Mitchell? Hell, who's getting Darius Garland?
Yeah.
And you see so many times when they're trying to put guys like Gary Trent Jr. in key defensive situations on guys, it just doesn't really work. So I think that's ultimately going to hold them back. Maybe Giannis is good enough, right? Maybe him and Dame go nuts in the series and they can ultimately pull an upset. But I've held out hope and I've watched them fail every time down the stretch, and I'm just like, I can't do it anymore.
Are we going to care about the All-Star game on Monday?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't think any of these All-Star games matter. It's funny, like, I feel like we have this, like, giant think piece conversation about the NBA All-Star break and the NBA All-Star game almost every single year. Meanwhile, you have sports like hockey are doing what they're doing. The NFL is completely abandoned playing any sort of sport, but for some reason it matters with the NBA All-Star game. No, I don't think it matters. Like, look, I'm a big hoop head. I love the NBA. I can't remember the last time I sat down to watch an NBA All-Star game, even when it was back to its normal setting. So I don't think we will care, but I'm sure because it's a slow time of year and mainstream media doesn't really follow college hoops a ton, I'm sure we'll have the giant think pieces about the problems with the NBA All-Star game on Monday.
Yeah, so we also have SNL 50 on Sunday.
Oh, that's right.
And then my wife is like the world's biggest White Lotus fan. So at best, it feels like All-Star games get TV too. But
yeah.
I'm with you. Like, I feel like we did this with the Pro Bowl like 10 years ago, maybe even longer than that. Like, when we first started to realize, like, oh, this is a touch football game. And we just kind of moved on. But it is weird how, like, we have to talk about it with the NBA All-Star game. It's like, what? We just kind of moved on with the Pro Bowl. Like, why are we doing this with the NBA All-Star game?
Yeah, I think it's a problem of where it's at in the calendar. You know, like I said, there's so many people who I think mainstream media wise, like when you're watching some of the debate shows, it's not a shot against them. They're not debating, you know, St. John's yesterday against Villanova, right? Like they don't really care about that kind of stuff. They're not talking about it. So they need to fill with content. And I think that's the low hanging fruit to talk about when you talk about no football and then post All-Star break with no basketball going on. You got to fill with some time. And that comes up almost every single week after the All-Star break. And it makes me roll my eyes every time. But like you said, hey, 50th anniversary. Was it 50th anniversary or whatever it is for Saturday Night Live? And I think Taylor Swift is on it, right? So maybe we're going to get some better conversations.
Yeah. No, but back with St. John's, though.
Yeah.
One thing that is amazing to me is when Patino, like everyone gives, you know, everyone went nuts about the clip of like when they shoot, I want to kill myself. As someone who took St. John's last night, I kind of agreed with him. Like, how many times can they clank a wide open three? Like, I swear to God, one time they had one possession with like four wide open threes. None of them had any prayer. Like, that is an unbelievably terribly shooting team.
They're like 300. They were going into that like 320th or 330th in three-point shooting in the country last night. And that's
that
one of the
good?
Things. Like, I have a futures ticket on them. But I do think, like, when they get into these tournament settings and these neutral courts, if you can't shoot yourself out of deficits or whatever it is, it's going to be a pretty big problem. So they're going to have to be, like, perfect defensively almost every single time because it's going to be hard to dig out of holes if they find themselves in it, how bad they are shooting.
JVT, you're great to join us. I know it's early out in Vegas. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
Jonathan Von Tobel of VSiN and ESPN Las Vegas. We come back. Let's talk to somebody smart about the Grizzlies. Chris Harrington joins the program next, right here on on the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built. It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This President's Day, upgrade the look of your home without breaking your budget. Save up to 50% site-wide on brand new window treatments now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, is the better way to give your home the presidential treatment. Blinds.com makes it easy with free virtual consultations on your schedule and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Choose from trending woven wood shades or upgrade to motorized. Blinds.com has everything and more, all with upfront pricing and no hidden fees. Need help with installation? Blinds.com can handle it for you. Or DIY with expert guidance from our design pros. With over 25 million windows covered and our 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can count on Blinds.com to deliver results you'll love. Shop Blinds.com's President's Day Mega Sale right now and save up to 50% site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Up to 50% off site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.